Council first passed the committee will come to order. The clerk will take the roll and note that there is a quorum present. My understanding is we're live. I don't know how far we're broadcasting. We're going on the house, inside the house, but outside of that, I don't know. Does anybody know how far my voice is carrying? At least to the back of the room, but beyond that, I... Hey, listen, you hear me all right? Oh, good. All right. Okay, we have a couple of announcements. First of all, Camille Perry is our page. I don't think I introduced her last time. Maybe she wasn't here, but that's the person that takes care of all the paper to our yeah? Welcome to the committee. And one other thing, Mike Beard is going to be an ex officio member of the Transportation Policy Committee, and we have a subcommittee on aviation. We keep our finger in the air to see what the airlines are doing. He's going to kind of follow that and report back occasionally. We'll be finding up several members of this committee, so if anyone is interested in that, would you please convey that thought to Margaret Amundson. We have in our packet a copy of the rules, and that will be on the airways after the meeting, but you can take a look at that if you have any questions. I'd be happy to talk to you after the meeting. We do have minutes. That's right. Who do we want to do this? Who gets to approve to move the first minutes of whatever date we met? I'm not sure here. It's not on anything. The last minutes. What? January 11th. Let's see. Do we have a volunteer? Okay. You can make the motion to approve the minutes of January 11th. Okay.
So moved.
And is there any questions about them or any corrections or additions? We'd be happy to hear you. Otherwise, seeing no objections, we will vote on those, and all in favor of accepting the minutes, please signify and say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are moved and accepted. Next, we have some presentations, some overviews. We have with us Margaret Donahoe, Legislative Director for the Transportation Alliance. And welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The Transportation Alliance is a statewide coalition of organizations that work in transportation and are concerned about transportation. And I've provided a list of our members so you can see exactly who's in the Transportation Alliance. We have both cities, counties, and private sector companies that are members. We're, on behalf of the Alliance, we're very pleased to be here today to talk about the unmet needs on the transportation system in Minnesota. And I'd like to start out with a short video that we've had produced that I think really gets to the heart of why transportation is so important to people and why it's so important to make the investments that are needed on the system. And then I'm going to just talk briefly about some trends that are happening with funding and then our analysis of what the unmet needs are.
We'll be right back.
to stop to think about it. We all use it. We entrust our loved ones to it. Our livelihoods depend on it. And we'd be lost without it. So what happens when we fail to keep pace with it? Congestion. It's not your imagination. It is getting worse. Nationwide, the Twin Cities rank second only to Atlanta in how fast congestion is growing. According to a recent survey by the Metropolitan Council, residents consider congestion their number one concern, outpacing crime, education, and housing. 15 years ago, 30% of our freeways were congested. Today, more than two-thirds of them are crowded to overflowing. With a million new residents expected within the next 25 years, the problem will only get worse.
Slow drive for a lot of areas, including 35W in Minneapolis, and
road safety. Here's a problem that is literally killing us. In 2003, more than 650 people died on Minnesota roads. Traffic accidents are the leading cause of death for young people. Of all fatalities, nearly 70% of them occur in rural areas. Here, many roads are two lanes with narrow shoulders, steep ditches, and sharp curves.
Mandy was the type of child that every parent dreams about having. She was a three-sport athlete, a straight-A honor roll student. One of her biggest dreams was to go on to college, and she wanted to become a pediatrician, and she wanted to put on the girls' softball team. That was her dream. She was incredibly excited and very eager to get behind the wheel, of course. That's always a bit scary for the parents of a new driver. We had dropped Grandma off at home. Eventually, we needed to get off the interstate and take a county road. Mandy, being the new driver that she was with her permit, as a parent, I was really careful to monitor her driving skills. She must have gone over a little bit onto that hard portion of the shoulder so that when that car ended, there was a big gap. That gap was so significant that it surprised me. And I'm sure it must have surprised her because she overcorrected. She found herself in the oncoming lane of traffic. So she immediately overcorrected again to get back into our side of the road. So then the next thing you know, we have this S-shaped curve. We hit two trees. Upon impact, it must have been great enough that it broke her neck. And she died immediately with me beside her. You know, when anyone suffers the tragedy and the loss of a child, it is so difficult to know what to do with that pain and suffering. What if that gap between that tired road and the gravel had not been so significant? What if it were level? That gravel would have been level with the road. Would she have lost control of that vehicle? And remember, it sure makes me wonder today. If by one word that I say here today, or one example that I give you, can make a difference in your child's life and ultimately save your child's life, it would have been worth it to me, because you know what? That one child could have been mine. That's my story. Thank you.
of 2 lanes would be needed on the busiest corridors just to accommodate the load. Budgets have been cut, fares have been increased, routes have been eliminated. And the rural areas are drastically underserved. Without the bus, seniors like Marion in Little Falls couldn't get around.
It's just where we want to go, and we don't have to worry about driving. I have driven, yes, but I'd rather ride the bus. After my husband passed away, when he sold the car. The cab is very expensive. Four and a quarter they run up to one way. 50 cents up and 50 cents back. Can't beat the price. What I like about riding the bus is the bus drivers are so courteous and kind, and they have a lot of patience, and you get to see a lot of scenic things when you ride around the bus too. It's my day. I go to the medical center, and we go shopping, Coburn, to Walmart.
Morning, Mary.
I like going to the beauty shop and meet other women, and kind of, you know how it is with women, we like to talk.
Would you like anything to drink or anything, Mary?
No, this is fine.
You're just going to relax, huh? I'll just relax. This is time to take a nap.
Well, it's just rely on the bus. By all means, good, so we can keep it going.
Without public transit, Marion and thousands of other Minnesota residents would be left at home or forced to move into assisted living facilities. The Minnesota Transportation Alliance is a member-based, not-for-profit coalition of citizens, businesses, labor, and local governments concerned about transportation in Minnesota. We believe that an effective transportation system is essential for Minnesota's economic competitiveness and quality of life. We also believe there is a solution. Here, within our community, our corporate citizens are designing a vision for the future. A future where our roads will keep pace with demand. A future where safety is paramount. And a future where everyone who needs it has access to transportation. If you are concerned about transportation issues, tired of waiting in traffic, concerned about safety, and interested in providing all of our citizens a way to get around, we'd like to hear from you. Log on to www.transportationalliance.com. Talk if you're concerned about congestion, safety, or public transit. You want your elected officials to get the message? Again, just honk. We'll help you send a message that gets noticed.
Okay, so that kind of sets the stage for how important this issue is, and we're going to be working to get the public more engaged in the issue as well, and understanding what's needed and what can be done about transportation. Right now I'd like to go through some of the information that's provided in this packet that has a lot of charts and graphs, and just kind of briefly talk about how we got to where we are in terms of transportation in Minnesota. As the governor noted in presenting his transportation funding plan, we're at least 15 years behind in meeting our transportation needs. We do have a backlog of projects and demand, and we believe that it's been a combination of growth and demand on the system and the lack of a significant increase in funding that has led to the transportation crisis that we're facing. As you can see from, it's actually the second chart in, the number of vehicle miles traveled in the state is escalating much more rapidly than even population growth. So while the population is increasing and we have more people using the system, all those people are also making more trips, and they're making longer trips. And so there's much more demand. By 2000, 62% of households in the metropolitan area own two cars. And so there's slightly more than one vehicle per licensed driver in the metropolitan region. And more people are coming. By 2030, as the Met Council has estimated, the region is expected to add an additional 1 million people who will generate an additional 4 million trips every day. And that's a 37% increase in travel. So we need to start working now to plan for that growth and those additional people. The result that we've seen because of the increased demand is congestion. And there have been studies done by the Texas Transportation Institute, which does an annual mobility analysis, that in the Twin Cities area at least, commuters are losing 42 hours and $740 a year stuck in traffic. So that's kind of the problem that we see. The other issue that we're hearing more and more about is, of course, moving freight, not just people, and the demands on the system to move products. Freight movement, of course, involves all the modes, trucks, rail, ports, and those intermodal connections are really critical to making sure that the freight is flowing. Forecasts for state freight flows estimate that 1,119 million tons of freight will be shipped in, out, and through Minnesota in 2020. And that's a 60% increase since 2001. So we're seeing a big growth in the demand to ship products through the state as well. And obviously the congestion adds to the cost of doing business if you have to ship products to or through the metropolitan area and your trucks are stuck in congestion. Another thing we're seeing is that more industries are seeking to haul heavier loads. And a lot of our roads just weren't built for that. While most of the trunk highway system has been built to a 10-ton standard, a lot of our local roads were not designed for that. And so as industries and agricultural groups are seeking to haul heavier loads, the local roads just are not able to handle those loads. And so what happens is that either the shippers risk fines for hauling loads illegally, or they seek weight exemptions, or exemptions from weight restrictions to use those roads. And ultimately, it's the taxpayers who bear the burden of roads wearing out faster because of these heavier loads. So we think that increasing the design and having more 10-ton roads would really help our economic competitiveness and allow for our industries to haul those heavier loads. MnDOT has been working with the counties to identify a network of 10-ton routes that makes sense for shipping products through the state. And if we can identify a system and start to work on upgrading those roads to a 10-ton standard, then we can help to alleviate a lot of the problem that we're seeing. So in addition to increased demands on the system to both move people and goods, we've also had a situation where the revenue has remained relatively flat. And as you can see from this first chart in this packet, this shows the revenue into the Highway Trust Fund from 1975 to 2002. And we hear a lot about increases in revenue into the trust fund, that it increases gradually every year. But when you look at this bottom line, where it's adjusted for inflation, it really hasn't been much of a growth in revenue. It's really the purchasing power of the revenue that we have going into the Highway User Fund has actually been pretty flat. The other trend that we have, which is on this chart about gas tax revenue, since our gas tax hasn't been increased since 1988, the purchasing power has eroded over the years. It hasn't kept up with inflation. So a 20-cent a gallon gas tax is really only worth about 12.5 cents today in terms of what it can purchase. In 2000, of course, there was a decrease in license tab fees, caps were put in, and that's had an impact on the constitutionally dedicated revenue going into the highway trust fund. And of course, the caps limit the amount of growth in that revenue source because it's no longer based on the value of the vehicle as much with those caps. The next chart here also gives you an estimate of the revenue that we've lost because we have not indexed our gas tax, and that's something that Wisconsin did do in 1988. And if we had indexed our gas tax in 1988 to keep up with inflation, that would have generated an additional $1.9 billion in revenue since 1990. So we wouldn't be in quite the same predicament that we're in today. The next chart in your packet has to do with some of the trends that we're seeing because there hasn't been a significant increase in state revenue, particularly on the local system. And so what you see is the lighter bar is 1990 revenues, and the darker bar is 2000 revenues. And you can see the jump in property taxes and special assessments, as well as the sale of local bonds, to deal with the local road and bridge problems. Because of the lack of an increase in the gas tax or license tab fees, where that revenue trickles down to the local system, local governments have had to rely more on property taxes to pay for their needs. The next chart in your packet shows some of the trends that were that are coming in terms of debt service. And if you recall that in 2003 there was a bonding package passed to provide $400 million in trunk highway bonds to accelerate a number of projects. That in the out years, that debt service will be paid out of the trunk highway fund, and it's not an unreasonable amount of debt service. At the same time, we'll be paying back several funds that have been advanced to accelerate those projects. But what we do see coming with the one-time money that was provided in 2000 and 2003 being spent is that, on the next chart you'll see, is kind of a funding cliff that's coming in a few years when the one-time money is spent, those projects are completed, and if we don't have an increase in revenue somewhere in those intervening years, the construction budget is going to fall off pretty dramatically. Another issue, since motor vehicle sales tax has become a big issue this session, just to remind everybody, in 1981, the legislature passed a law to phase in transferring all of the motor vehicle sales tax revenue to highways and transit. And I've provided the schedule of how that was supposed to happen under the law that was passed in 1981. And you can see that what actually happened was far different from what had been intended, and that the most that was ever transferred was in 1990. That was 35%. So while this idea of transferring motor vehicle sales tax revenue to transportation has been around for a while, we haven't been able to quite get there. And so on the next page, we've calculated the loss of revenue because the transfer didn't happen the way the legislature had intended. And you can see that we've lost over $5 billion since 1990, because that transfer didn't happen. So again, that's another reason why we're in the predicament that we're in, because the revenues just haven't kept pace. Good intentions in the past didn't pan out. And so combined with the demands on the system, we just have a huge unmet need. And so the next chart, just to call your attention to kind of what's being projected, shows projections from the Department of Finance for the Trunk Highway Fund, and it only goes out as far as fiscal year 2009. But we are seeing a slight decrease in revenue into the trunk highway funds from 2007 levels. And so there is a concern about, you know, the level of funding that's going into to pay for our highways. The next chart that I've provided is actually a spreadsheet, and this, as I said earlier, is some analysis that the Alliance has done as far as what is needed as far as transportation investments in Minnesota. And our members wanted to find a way to kind of get our arms around this that people could understand and that followed the priorities that have been identified. And so we focused on eliminating the bottlenecks in the metropolitan area, completing the Beltway, the 494-694 Beltway, and focusing on interregional corridors, along with making transit investments that have been identified by the Met Council and MnDOT as needed transit investments. So just doing basically those four things, focusing on those four areas, we looked at what it would take to really do that. And our goal would be to do that in a 10-year time frame. So on the first page of this, you'll see this looks at bottlenecks and major river crossings just in the metropolitan area. And what we did is we looked at some numbers that were put together by the department, and this is kind of old information because over the summer and fall, MnDOT has been updating their 20-year plans. And so we don't have new numbers yet, but these are kind of old numbers, so we think it's a pretty conservative estimate of the cost of these various projects that are categorized as bottlenecks. The 494-694 projects that you see are what would be needed to complete the Beltway. And then there are some major river crossings that are also needed. And what we did is we took the estimate from the department, we inflated it to $2,004 dollars. We looked at what's in the current 10-year plan to fund those projects, and we subtracted for that, and we were left with a funding gap. So this is what's not, we don't have funding to do these projects. And you can see that in the metropolitan area, just for bottlenecks and major river crossings, the estimate is $2.7 billion to complete these projects in 10 years. The next page is again dealing with the metro area, and that looks at interregional corridors that the department has done some analysis on. And again, these are kind of older cost estimates, but we looked at what had been identified, the cost to do that, what's currently in the 10-year plan to do those interregional projects, interregional corridor projects, and then what the gap is. And so for interregional corridors, the gap is $814 million in order to do this in the next 10 years. For transit improvements, we looked at what the Met Council has identified as Tier 1 transit improvements and their long-range plans, and that includes the North Star Commuter Rail project, a transit layer of some kind in the Central Corridor, and we assumed LRT, the Northwest Busway, the 35W BRT, the Cedar Busway, some design and planning work on Southwest Rush Line and Red Rock. And then a 50% increase in the current bus system. So you can see that in adding up all of those projects and the gap in funding is about $1.5 billion to do those projects. On the next page, we get into Greater Minnesota needs. And again, we really focus here on the interregional corridors because that has been the priority that the state and the department has identified. And looking at draft plans for improvements in those corridors, we came up with a gap of $2.6 billion for interregional corridors. And then we looked at projects that had been identified in 2003 for potential advancement under a bonding plan. But, of course, not all the projects that were eligible to be accelerated were accelerated. So these are the projects that were not accelerated under that bonding proposal. And so we did a gap analysis of that, and it's $220 million to do those projects that could be advanced if there were additional dollars provided. The Greater Minnesota Transit, we got information from the department about capital and operating needs over the next 10 years. and that's $215 million. And then we also looked at the needs on the local system, and that's on the next page, where we looked at needs for city and county bridges. And for local roads, we worked with the County Engineers Association, and they have developed a 50-year life cycle cost analysis. So what this represents is the cost to replace local roads once every 50 years. So this only deals with the existing system. And then we did the same kind of analysis with city streets, and we also looked at township bridges. So for the local system, we came up with a gap of 2.1 billion over 10 years for the local system. Then we also included some funding, and these are very rough estimates, for ports and waterways, the $15 million to restore the state airport fund, and some funding for freight rail under the Rail Service Improvement Program. And so the grand total in looking at all of those particular needs, and also including some maintenance needs for the trunk highway system, we came up with an unfunded need of $1.4 billion that would be needed each year over the next 10 years to complete all of these projects and meet all of these needs. And a lot of the reason that we did this particular analysis is that over the years, we've advocated, obviously, for transportation funding increases for many years. The Alliance has been around for a long time. And one of the criticisms that we've had is that people weren't sure where the money would go. There was a sense, well, you always want more money, and we're not sure what's going to be done with it, and we're not sure it's really needed. So we did this not necessarily to say that the funding should be tied to these specific projects, but for illustrative purposes to say that if this kind of funding were provided, here's what could be done. Or if you want, on the other hand, if you want to get these projects done, here's what it's going to cost. And so we're not necessarily saying these are the projects that should for sure get done, but it's not just a black hole of need that's out there or some number that we picked out of the sky. These numbers really are tied to specific projects and needs, and they are real estimates of unfunded need. So to sum all this up, the magnitude of the problem is definitely significant, and delay will only add to the cost of these projects. Our estimate is in 2004 dollars. So anything that's done beyond that, of course, will cost more due to inflation. And as we look out at the rising cost of oil, steel, aggregate, the construction inflation has really been pretty significant. It's been running around 12% compared to general inflation of about 2.7%. So we know that by deferring these projects, the costs only go up. It's going to cost more to the taxpayers to do the same projects the longer we wait to get them done. And also I'd just like to note that I thought it was put really well that by the Met Council that, you know, maintaining highway funding at current levels will result in significant increases in traffic congestion, delaying the movement of people and goods, reducing economic competitiveness, and harming our quality of life. Current levels of transit funding will not be adequate to even maintain service at current levels, let alone expand it. So we think that we have a big problem ahead of us, a big challenge to meet all of these needs, you know, congestion needs, safety needs, quality of life issues, the cost of doing business, investments that are needed to make our businesses more competitive. And so our message basically is that we need to take action now, that something needs to be done to increase revenue, to increase these investments, or we'll continue to have these kinds of problems. And I would be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
You're also stunned by the enormous amounts of money you can even raise. What's going on?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is really quite simple. Do you have any suggestions for a solution? And I'm not being facetious. Every committee, every political action group, every interested person is doing the same thing. They're saying we need more money. Now this is to me is a stunning figure. So I'm not being a smart aleck. Do you have any suggestions for a solution? You know, other than just raising the income tax rate, say 50 or 60%.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Yes, we do have a specific funding proposal, and I would be happy to share that with the committee. I guess my charge today was to talk about the problem, and that we're going to talk more about solutions at future hearings. But the Alliance does have a very specific funding proposal, and we're hoping to get it introduced as legislation this session.
Anyone else have a question? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any last concerns? Next, we have Randy Halverson, Director of Program and Development Division. We mean that on the transportation performance measures and state and district planning process that they've gone through to arrive at what they think the problems are.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Randy Halverson, Director of MnDOT's Division of Program Management, and with me today is Abby McKenzie, who for the last 3 years has been the primary shepherd of our planning process. So the numbers that we'll be talking about today have emerged from that process. And what I would like to do is explain the process both at the statewide and the district level and the performance-based planning approach that we have adopted back in 1997. Before we get to the presentation, I have to make one caveat, however. We have a number of maps in the presentation. They are used for purposes of illustration only. They do not represent decisions that have been made about projects. So they're merely here to illustrate, give you a visual illustration of the differences between what we can achieve in investments at the current funding level and what we could achieve if we had enough money to meet our performance targets that we'll be talking about. There are a number of slides. I can get through them quite rapidly, but even at a rapid pace, it'll take about a half an hour. So my suggestion is if you could hold questions to the end, if that's okay, then we can come back to any of the parts that you have a particular interest in. So with that, let us begin. We're in the final stages of a process to determine future highway and transit investments in this state. I'll cover only highways today because of interest of time. We'll explain how the district plans were developed, and in doing that, we'll define our performance-based planning. We'll outline the MnDOT's highway planning and programming process. We'll identify performance measures and targets, and we will indicate the resulting investment that's been identified, which are displayed on the next page. The district plan investments are summarized this way. The investment to meet the performance measure targets between years 2008 and 2030 are $38.1 billion. The forecasted available revenue for this time period is $14.5 billion, and that's divided 14.2 into what I'll describe in a moment as performance-based plans and $0.3 billion for community priorities. Then the difference between those numbers are the additional investment to meet these performance targets in the time period. That's $23.9 billion over 23 years, so that's roughly $1 billion a year. So I will now explain the process that we use to come up with these numbers, and we'll end with a series of pie charts that distribute these numbers among the policies in the plan. So on slide four, performance-based transportation planning is a relatively new approach which focuses on outcomes and describes how the system works for its users. And I'll use as an example speeds on interregional corridor systems. It describes the physical condition of our infrastructure, for example, the structural integrity of our bridges, and it emphasizes cost-effective investments. And what I'll be talking about is our effort to minimize life cycle costs for these investments. This this approach is part of a nationwide trend, basically to improve accountability. It allows us to talk very specifically about where your dollars are going and what will result from them. It's consistent with this administration's governing principles of focusing on customers and managing for results. But I need to say that this process began in earnest in 1997, and the approach has been endorsed by three successive administrations. The performance-based management approach, and when I talk briefly about our strategic plan, the three strategic directions have also been endorsed by three successive administrations. We believe that the plan is basically conservative in nature and fundamentally based in a very sound methodological approach. This next slide, many of you have seen this before, I won't dwell on it. It's simply a schematic of MnDOT's highway planning and programming process. It begins at the highest level with our strategic plan. In a moment I'll talk about our three strategic directions. It moves forward then with our statewide transportation plan, which we completed in October of 2003. What I'll be primarily talking about today is the output of the district plans, and this is the level at which we identify investments to achieve the policies and the performance targets set in the statewide plan. And then moving to the right in this chart to get more specific, we have a 10-year list of highway, 10-year program of highway projects, and then an annual highway construction program.
Can we, may I request to go a little slower?
Oh, Elvis, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're going about 800 miles an hour, and that's fine and good. But I think one of the statements you made just a short time ago on your slide on page 5, and you stated, you know, well, I won't go over this because you've all seen it a lot. I think it's incumbent upon you to understand that there are 14 members of this committee that have not served on it before.
Okay.
And I think that it's only fair to those, especially if not everybody else, that you do take the time to explain some of that type of stuff. So, sorry for interrupting you, but I think that is important.
I'll slow down. I was trying to do this in a half an hour, but
we are somewhat constrained by time. So,
yeah, I'll drop it into second gear, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Sure.
On page 6, this chart represents the policy framework that has emerged from our strategic plan in our statewide transportation plan. The row across the top that says strategic directions come directly from the strategic plan, and there are three. Safeguard what exists, make the transportation network operate better, and make MnDOT as an organization work better. And these are the three directions that I said have been successively approved and reconfirmed by three administrations in a row now. What I'll be talking about specifically are four of these. Under a safeguard what exists, number one, preserve essential elements of the existing transportation system. Then in the second column, number 5, enhance mobility and interregional transportation corridors linking regional trade centers. Number 6, enhance mobility within major regional trade centers. And then finally, we will be talking about ensuring the safety and security of our transportation systems and their users. So turn to slide 6. Before looking at all four of these policies, we need to define a couple of key terms. Each policy has a set of measures, and each set of measures has a target to be achieved within a specific time frame. Measures are simply defined as a consistent set of numbers that tells us how we're going to achieve, how we're going to move forward in achieving a desired outcome. And the example that we're using here is the percent of bridge area with structural condition rating good or better. And I'll talk more specifically about these when I get to the policies. The target in this case would be 60% of the bridges need to be rated good or better by 2023. This approach is comprehensive and we believe basically conservative. Slide 8. There were three purposes for our district plans. The first one was to create an objective and consistent statewide estimate of investment to meet performance targets. And this is really a critical point that I'll come back to, that in all of our districts, the same methodology, the same approach will be used in assessing the nature and the condition of our infrastructure. Number 2, to prioritize investments for forecasted available funding. I'll be talking more about that. And number 3,
identify those performance target categories where additional funding could be applied and the range of options that are available. Slide 9, as I mentioned, the district plans will discuss in depth 5 performance policies. I'll be talking about 4 of them today: system preservation, interregional mobility, trade center mobility, and safety. The plans cover 3 specific periods of time, and most importantly, they focus on 2 investment scenarios. What can we achieve with our current level of funding, and what do we need to achieve the performance targets set in the plans? Slide 10. Now I'm going to start working through the individual policies. The first policy and our number one priority is to preserve the essential elements of the transportation system. And I'll use as an illustration here our pavements and bridges. So under pavement, 70% of our system should have a present serviceability rating of 3.1 or above. Now, present serviceability rating, referred to as PSR, is simply a numerical index that indicates the roughness of the pavements, and it goes from 0 to 5. So our target is 3.1. The goal is to maximize system-wide life cycle costs, and to do this we need to perform annual inspections, maintain pavements, maintain a pavement inventory, and utilize an investment model that actually tells us when the appropriate time and fix is for each pavement segment on the trunk highway system. These can range from a simple seal coating to a reconstruction, much more complex. We have the basic same approach with bridges. In this case, 60% of the trunk highway bridge area must be in good structural condition. We seek to prolong the useful life of these structures, like pavements. We conduct annual inspections. We have an inventory. And we have a series of fixes that are based upon type, age, and condition of the bridges. And those fixes, again, can range from a simple painting to a total replacement. Slide 11. Policy 7, increase safety and security of the transportation system and users. One of the significant differences between the plan we adopted, the statewide plan we adopted in August of 2003, and plans previously adopted were, we made a very strong statement, an explicit statement about safety in the state. We all saw, I think, some rather compelling testimony on the video just a few moments ago. And we had a discussion with the public when we held 8 public hearings around the state at the conclusion of the 28-month process in which we adopted the state plan. And there was a very strong message that, yes, safety is an important component for what we should do. The question was, should the department actually take the bold step and start declaring some specific performance measures to be achieved? Accidents tend to be pretty random, and historically we've shied away from that. We're no longer shying away from it, and in this case we've set some specific targets to be achieved. And what this map, what this schematic actually says is, if you look at the 3 lines on the chart, the top one is the dashed line, which are the number of fatalities in the year 2023 that we could expect if we continue the course that we're on, 735. The 2 lines below, the green line, is defined as a moderate target of 600 and the more aggressive target of 550. Now, if you turn to slide 12, the question that you ask is, how do we achieve these sort of targets? So I would draw your attention to the 3rd bullet on this page. It requires a comprehensive, multi-jurisdictional approach, including 4 E's. You may have heard of these previously: education, enforcement, engineering, and emergency services. Now, we have, for the first time, in the process of adopting a comprehensive highway system plan that gets much more specific about what we intend to do in collaboration with the State Patrol to meet the targets that we have set. There are a list of strategies. The strategies are quantified both by cost and a projected number of fatalities that we think would be reduced if the strategy was enacted. Slide 13. I'm moving now to Policy 5, enhance mobility between trade centers. This is a map of the interregional corridor system created in 1999 with targets noted on the left-hand side. And for the high priority IRCs, the target is 60 miles an hour. For our medium priorities, 55. And for regional corridors, 50 miles an hour. The next slide, 14, is an indication visually of the investments that we need to make to meet the performance targets we've set for safety. So it's just a quick visual look. Now, if you go to slide 14A, this is what the map would look like under priorities set for forecasted available money. In other words, the money that will be available under current conditions. So on all of these illustrations, as we move forward, the second map always has a much fewer level of investments than the first. If you move to slide 15, this is a map of the Seven County metro area with the IRC systems that come in the Seven County area and connect to the ring road on slide 15. Now, you will see that there are three types of investments. The red lines are indicate IRC expansions. The green boxes are IRC interchanges, primarily for the reason of mobility, and the blue boxes are IRC interchanges built primarily for safety. And this map changes rather dramatically when you look at slide 15A under forecasted funds available. All that's left are the IRC interchanges primarily for safety. We move to slide 16. That's policy 6. Enhance the mobility within metro and regional trade centers. And this is a map that shows the location of our trade centers statewide. I think there are 50, if I remember. Then we'll start with the metro area and turn to page 17. This is a schematic of that shows the targets we have set for the metro freeway system, congestion levels. And you'll see the definition of congestion on in the top line of the graph. Congestion is defined as the percentage of freeway system directional miles operating below 45 miles an hour for 1 hour or more during peak periods. So what you have is a series of lines in this chart that show various performance targets. If we did nothing after 2010, this number would be 48%. With available funding, the congestion levels would be 41.5%. With investments to meet our performance targets, the goal would be one-third of the system, 33.1%. Now, to illustrate the magnitude of the problem, the orange line there is called an aggressive target. An aggressive target is an investment that will nearly get you what you have today in terms of congestion. So our goal is to manage congestion by slowing the rate of growth, not by eliminating congestion, which we frankly will never do. So the two maps that follow then, here are the investments, the illustration of investments that would be available to meet performance targets. Freeway expansion, you see there's a lot of blue on this system. That means a lot of work has to be done on the freeway system. However, the map changes again dramatically with our limited ability to meet these targets based on current funding. So freeway expansion then becomes much more limited. If you move to slide 19, in the metro area, we also have an arterial congestion target. Arterial is, for those of you that may not be familiar with the nomenclature that I'm using, our highway system is divided into functional classes, principal freeways, principal arterials, minor arterials, and collectors. So in addition to the freeways, a lot of traffic moves in the metro area on this arterial system. So here congestion is defined as the percent of the arterial directional lane miles operating at less than two-thirds of the posted speed for 1 hour or more during peak periods. And again, if you look at the chart, we have four lines. The top one is the no-build scenario. If you did nothing, it will rise to 50%. Under the forecasted available funding, it only drops to 47%. But at our investment, and to meet our performance targets, then we then drop to 35%. And again, to make the point about the severity of the condition that we're in, a very aggressive target, and we frankly don't expect to ever get a level of money that would allow us to do this, would put us at 29%, which is what you see is what you get, the condition that's simply maintained today. Slide 20 then shows the investments to meet the performance targets for our arterial measure. So a lot of green on the map shows arterial expansion. Go to slide 21, and again you'll see a rather dramatic reduction in our ability to meet the needs on the arterial system. Slide 21, we're moving now from Metro to Greater Minnesota Trade Centers. Then the congestion indicators are based on forecasted average annual daily traffic. Once the thresholds that are listed there are met, we conduct an area traffic study with a view towards a multi-jurisdictional approach. In other words, we don't always assume that an investment has to be made on the trunk highway system to improve traffic flow in a metropolitan area. It perhaps could be made in conjunction with the local unit of government on a parallel local system. So all of that is analyzed in the studies that we conduct. If you turn to slide 22, this illustrates the investments that we could make, that we need to make to meet our performance targets. There are 50 regional trade centers in the state. The red indicates the investment thresholds that we would need to reach the trigger points on the previous slide. And if you count the red dots, there are 20. Now, if you move to slide 22, which again is what can we do with available money, the number of red dots is 10. So just to illustrate the point, once again, under current funding conditions, we can do much less than we could if we could actually meet the targets that we've set in these two plans. Slide 23, now I'm moving to this concept called community improvement projects that I mentioned before. The bulk of the investments that emerge from our district plans are directed towards achieving these performance-based scenarios. However, we wanted to give our district engineers some flexibility in their investments, so 3 to 5% of the district forecasted available fund can be invested in what we've defined as community improvement projects. These investments are not directed to essential system performance targets, but address important local concerns that are not specifically performance-based. Now, move on to slide 24. Here begin the graphs now that I talked about earlier that describe much more specifically where this money could be used. For the time period 2008 to 2030, investments to meet our performance targets are $38.1 billion. And if you look at that little square box on the right, that's the key to these numbers. 23% would be for infrastructure preservation, 15% for inter-regional mobility, 46% for trade center mobility, and 16% for safety. If you turn to slide 25. When we consider the available funding scenario, it's important to note that pavement and bridge preservation are our top priorities and will be fully funded under the current scenario. That's the instructions that we've given to the districts. The priorities among the other performance targets and community improvement projects are determined by the districts along with their stakeholders. So if you turn to slide 26, this is what the forecasted available funding priorities look like under current funding scenario, $14.2 billion. So if you look at the key at the right on the bold box, it says districts can spend $300 million of this money on community improvement project priorities. The rest, the lion's share, will be spent for infrastructure improvement. A number one priority is to preserve the current system and to address safety needs on that system, 61%. Interregional mobility, 6%, trade center mobility, 19%, and safety as a separate category, 14%. If you move to slide 27, the additional investments to meet the performance targets, as we mentioned when we started out, is $23.9 billion. So if you look at the box on the right, where will that money be spent? Infrastructure preservation, 1%, and the reason that's so low is because that's the number one priority and that's where our money is currently being directed. Interregional mobility, however, 20%, trade center mobility, 63%, and safety, 16%. The last slide is or the concluding slide simply notes the benefit of what we've defined as a performance-based investment approach. Number one, pavement and bridges are maintained at a minimum life cycle cost, and we can talk more about what that means if you have a particular interest in that. Secondly, interregional travel speeds, 60 to 55 miles an hour on all corridors, are important to maintain, key to maintaining the supports economy. We have, as I mentioned before, done this similar sort of analysis for Greater Minnesota Transit. I haven't addressed it today, but I'll give you the shortfall numbers: $435 million for operating needs, $144 million shortfall for capital needs. Number four, the metro area of Beltway could be completed, and we would slow the rate of freeway congestion. And the numbers that you see on the written material that you have, 31 versus 43, the number should be 33 versus 41. We transposed those second. Did we change that on the slide? Okay. The screen is correct. What you have as a handout is not correct. So change 31 to 33, 43 to 41. So that conforms with the charts that you had seen earlier. Number five, Greater Minnesota Trade Center mobility improves, again, the support for local economy. And finally, the statewide, we hope to achieve a statewide reduction in fatalities and serious injuries. So, Mr. Chairman, this is meant to give you a very high-level overview of how we came up with these numbers, and we stand ready to answer questions you may have about this process.
Representative Leader.
Interstate
or will you use your mic, Representative Leader? Please.
Mr. Helverson, when you talk about interstate expansion and arterial expansion, are you talking about additional lanes or just upgrading the present lanes?
Expansion would imply additional lanes.
Is that right-of-way costs included? Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Helverson, in your figures, are you including additional right-of-way costs in all of these cases?
Yes, we are.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halverson, I have a question between interregional mobility and trade center mobility. Are one of those ranked higher in the priorities? You indicated that infrastructure preservation is the number one funding priority.
Mr. Halverson?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Although I said our number one priority is preservation of the system, the other nine policies are not ranked in priority order. In other words, 10 isn't the 10th priority. But we made it very clear, and the public supported this assessment when we had our public hearings. We broke the hearing attendees at the hearings into areas of interest. So we had a long discussion, and we asked the question of all of these, what's more important? And continually the response was number one. And it was so overwhelming, and there were about 1,000 people, 800 people at least, that, which is a huge number. I want to say that it's very hard, and I've been through this at least three times in 12 years, to go out and talk at a rather esoteric level with people about investments that would be made 20 years, 23 years in advance. So when we did this in 2003, however, I was astounded at the turnout. Each district had upwards of over 100 people to come talk about this planning process. My conclusion was that, number one, the department had probably done a better job this time around about notifying people that we were having these meetings. But more importantly, I had a sense that transportation was coming up on people's agendas as important. So we asked them, you know, of these 10, are any more important than the others? And they said, before you make an investment in anything, you got to preserve what you got. Kind of, we use the analogy, if you're going to put an addition on your house and your roof is leaking, you better fix your roof first, because it doesn't make any sense.
Just a little follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the difference between interregional mobility projects and trade center mobility projects? And maybe you covered that, and sorry if I didn't catch it the first time around.
Interregional.
You know,
the one is corridor based, and the other, no?
Yeah.
Oh, and the other is within urban areas. So the difference between the two policies is within an urban area, St. Cloud, Duluth, the Twin Cities, or a mobility between those regional systems. So we look at both.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halverson, in your slide 13, enhancing mobility between trade centers, and then going to your slide 14 and 15, I'm just wondering, I guess it's actually, what I'm looking for is your expansion for main roads like Highway 12 going to Wilmer. Is there anything in the books to expand Highway 12 future? I mean, this looks like it's going to 2030, and I'm just wondering, I've got constituents who have asked at my town meetings about expansion of Highway 12.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Abby McKenzie. In picking, essentially in that area of the state, there are three major corridors, 2, 12, 7, and 12. In the interregional corridor process, based on the input of the business community and the like, 212 was established as the interregional corridor. So 12 is a regional corridor. So you're not going to see it here expanded as an interregional corridor because it's not. Now, I believe in the plan, though, districts 3 and 8 identified as an expansion need for safety purposes. Peggy, no, you don't think so. Well, we'll have to look into that and get the answer.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Halverson, I believe you said for rural transit, you provided for operating costs of $435 million. Is that on the same basis as the percentage of operating costs now, or is that assuming it's going to be the same level for that 30 years?
The analysis is basically the same as we've done on the highway side, projecting needs for the time period that we've looked at. Then, for example, operating costs will be growing at a, I don't know what the, do you remember what the rate was?
Well, first, for the operating service needs to grow to meet the performance targets for fully serving these communities by different community types. And as the service grows and the fleet grows, then the operating costs grow in order to operate those systems. So it's a kind of two-step function in establishing the and meeting the performance targets for the rural plan.
I don't know. All right. You have to use that microphone because we are having a... There we go. Representative, you have a follow-up?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. I guess the question I was asking, if you assumed an increase, because I believe the percentage is 25, or the local share plus the state share, your operational cost, you haven't participated to that extent, and in 30 years, I think you're going to have quite a change. Now, are you assuming a change coming as far as the portion that the state would apply to rural transit?
No, I don't think we're assuming a change. I've got the numbers in front of me, Representative Leader. I only mentioned the state gap is $435 million, but the local gap under the current formula, which you're familiar with, requires a combination of federal, local, and state money to fund a transit system. The local gap for the operating costs are $97 million, and the local gap for capital costs are $36 million. So if you want to get a look at the total cost gap, you got to add those two together. So I only talked about the state portion. So the assumption that we're making is that the systems would be funded basically as they are now with the three-part partnership with the ratios that we're operating under now.
Representative Fritz.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Halverson, I have a question about, I live in Faribault, Minnesota, and of course I'm concerned about the Faribault Viaduct and that that bridge that needs to be widened and repaired. And along with that, the need, I think, because of the increase in transportation over that viaduct to the Faribault prison, and with the Faribault expansion of that prison, would increase traffic. Is there anything that you could tell me about moving that project up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative I don't know, but I'm going to ask my colleagues in the room from the department if anybody is familiar with this project.
Is that on the highway 14 for sure over there?
No.
Oh. That's a shame.
That's, Mr. Chair, that sort of project would be addressed in the specifics of the district plan, and we'll have to go look at it and get back to you, because I personally don't know.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Is this $38.1 billion, is that in today's dollar? If we do it out on issue and satisfy that, or is this some inflation dollars in there?
Mr. Chairman, I will defer to the economist on my left.
Mr. Chair, this is the revenues and project costs are all in 2004 dollars.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else have... Yes, Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halverson, if we have specific questions on a certain road in our district, how would we go about finding where that is in future priorities?
There are two ways. The easiest way is just give me a call, and I'll hook you up with your district engineer, or we can go to the district plan and get the information for you. Whichever you prefer is... Whatever's easiest for you, we'll accommodate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the district plans are now out for public review almost all day. All eight districts are actually in their public review process in the month of January, so it's a good time to get your input in.
Establish some kind of principle of we won't pick on specific projects here, but when you think of the good of the state as a whole, let them back kind of select those if they think are higher on the priority list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe you're referring to the fact that the past policy in the committees that has that committees doesn't have or has never approved local projects as a project. Is that what you're saying? That's been past policy. That's correct.
Yeah. So that's just for the new folks in here. We're not for your project. We want you to think of the good of all the projects on everybody's mind. And we're going to move forward with whatever we end up here with transportation, financing, and so forth. Are there any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I was very clear and concise, and besides that, we have it. We can take this home and leave this tonight.
Put it under your pillow.
Thank you. Incidentally, there is a save spot in your folder, so if anybody wants to save some of the material, please put it in there, and we will throw it out when we clean up the folders. Any other business? Oh, okay. Well, my committee administrator reminds me that you can't bring your lunch or your dinner to committee, but you can bring liquids if you it gets kind of dry sometimes, and you'll have a bottle of water and not pass out. So, oh yes, and take your empties. Your mama ain't here to clean up after you. So with that, we will adjourn for the day.